Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to episode number 2 of Angels Among Us. Michaela rudely interrupted while I was telling a story.
We gotta have a cliffhanger, okay? They gotta come back.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you've listened to episode 1. If you haven't listened to episode 1, jump over, go listen to that story first. Unless you're one of those weird people that listens to things out of order. That's fine, too. Whatever you want. We like weird people, too.
Mm. Yeah, you're pretty weird.
Yeah, you fell in love with me. So, okay, so I guess we'll just jump right back into our story. This is part 2. There will be a part 3 also. So, hopefully we can just climb right up to another mountain and then leave you hanging. We'll see. Okay, so as I said before, COVID had just hit. We were out getting some takeout, and we got a phone call from my mom. And it sounded like she was a little distressed, like something was wrong. And initially, I thought it was maybe my dad. Something was wrong with my dad. But I said, "What is it?" And she said, "It's about a baby." And I said, "Oh," I said, "let me go get the food. I'll call you back." So I went in, and I don't know what your thoughts were like at that moment, but I went in and was picking up the food. And of course I was like, well, here we go again. You know, there's always a baby. But this was the first time that it had been from like my mom or a very close family member like that. So I think in that time, I knew that she wouldn't have called unless there was something really kind of promising. And so once I realized that, I think I started to kind of get my hopes up a little bit. And that was before I even heard anything. What were you thinking?
I think for me, I just was so numb at that time about that. Like, I was always so open, but at the same time, like, I didn't think that, like, it would actually be a situation where we could actually adopt, and because of everything that we had gone through. So I think that I was more numb to all of that and just kind of like, okay, whatever, you know, another baby, whatever, you know, because we had been approached so many times over the years about, you know, so-and-so's baby or brother of a sister or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and remember, this was pretty much right at the very beginning of COVID. We had just been let down about IVF, and it was about 6 months after the scammed adoption. So, you know, we were kind of in a low as far as the roller coaster goes, right, at that time. But I don't want to say that, I mean, we're still optimistic, right? And anyway, I called my mom back, and I guess before I get into that, adoption too, if you're in our situation, adoption is, it's a very beautiful thing, but it can also be very scary. And just because there's just so many different things that can happen. And, you know, I think we had heard a lot of horror stories mm-hmm. from people. So that, I think that's kind of why we wanted to go the IVF route initially. You know, while keeping adoption or fostering to adopt kind of as an option, but kind of put on a back shelf somewhere. Not for any particular reason other than I think we just wanted to try everything we absolutely could to have some our biological kids. So anyway, we talked to my mom. She kind of explains the situation. We have some good family friends back home in my hometown that had called my mom and kind of filled them in. There was a lady that they were kind of trying to help get back on their feet for the last few months. You know, she was pregnant and they were trying to kind of help her, give her a safe place. We didn't know a ton of details early on. Do you remember if she told us much of anything about the birth or anything?
Not really, just that she had walked away, like, from the hospital and because of the situation that she was in.
Yeah, we'll talk more details here in a little bit, but it's a pretty sad situation. But we had, I think my mom initially told us that this particular lady, the birth mother, she had given birth, this was her seventh child, and she had never had custody of any of them. And you hear something like that, and honestly, I think our first reaction to something like that was, oh, what a terrible person. Like, how could she continue to do this, you know? And the more and more invested we got, we realized that that is such a terrible judgmental way to think. And
yeah, and I think that, like, over even the last 5 years of telling our story, like, that's like so many people's reaction to yeah. it is like, how, why wouldn't she just, you know, like, you know, get her tubes tied or whatever the case may be. And I think that it's easy for us to judge, but, like, and we will tell you a little bit about her story, but, like, meeting with her, I remember her telling me that it was because that was the only time that she had ever felt loved and that she had control over her life. And so it kind of changed my thoughts about the situation and her so greatly. And yeah.
So let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
You jumped the gun just a
I know,
tiny I'd bit. That's stop. Okay. So my mom told us, she said it was a little girl and said that our family friends had initial custody, emergency custody of this baby. And she said that they had talked with the mother and that they kind of told her our story. And if we would be interested, that she would be willing to meet with us and would possibly be open to having us adopt her. And So my mom asked us if we would be interested, and we didn't even have to talk about it. There was no hesitation. It was, of course, like, you know, we are not afraid to get our hearts broken. It's okay. If that's what it takes for us to get our family, then sign us up. So Michaela drove down that following day to Ellensburg.
I called my boss and I asked him and told him what was happening. And he said, yeah, absolutely.
So she drove down. It's about a 2-hour drive from where we are. And actually, funny enough, this conversation with my mom happened exactly 5 years ago from today. And so...
I'm giving you chills.
Spoiler alert, Reese's birthday was yesterday, her 5th birthday. And so we got the phone call the day after she was born. And Michaela drove down to meet her the day she went home from the hospital. Got to meet Reese for the first time. Yeah. And your mom was with you, right?
My angel mother.
Yes, she is. And then my mom got to go later that day also.
Yep, Brent's mom went a little bit later. And it was just a surreal moment to meet her. Like, and I remember like seeing her and just like, it was a weird feeling. Like I knew that she was mine, but at the same time, like, I didn't want to get too close.
Kind of had your guard up.
Yeah,
for a little
bit. Had my guard up a little bit, but like, I was already, I think Brent and I mean, I'm speaking for you, but I think that like in every situation in our life, like I'm trying not to cry, but I think that we try really hard to open our hearts as much as we can. And even through all the pain, like we still, like you said, like we're still open, you know, because at some point you have to just start trusting God that He has a plan. And, I think that we were just really hopeful and to any possibility, but at the same time, like through all the pain that we have gone through, it does kind of harden you a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's why a lot of people aren't okay with fostering, or they don't want to jump into fostering, because, you know, you get attached to these kids, these little spirits, and then they can be taken from you at any moment. Okay, so at this time, the birth mom, and we will call her Tracy. That's not her real name. We'll call her Tracy. She had been drug tested and tested positive. So at that moment, that's when the state gets involved and CPS basically took the baby from her. She explained to us that I don't even know if she got to hold her or anything.
No, they brought her in. She was able to like look at her, and then they took her.
Yeah, so I can't even imagine.
And then she had to walk home that same day.
Yeah, she walked home, you know, had just given birth and didn't have a ride. Walked home. And so anyway, we knew that getting into this, the state was involved. We had looked a little bit into foster care, but we hadn't really done anything. We just knew that it wasn't really something that we wanted to jump into. I guess until we were forced into it. Right. So Michaela actually got to meet the social worker at the time that same day and visit with her a little bit. And fortunately for us, COVID had just hit, right? And nobody knew how to handle anything. They were basically trying to get babies to places, to safe places. And it was, I can't even imagine what they had to go through, through all of that. But they didn't really have any real protocol or anything. Our family friend had kind of explained the situation. They were given emergency custody, right? So for that first 3 weeks or so of Reese's life, Michaela would stay at our family friend's house. She was basically like the mom. She took care of her during the night, would come home, or I would go and meet on the weekends mm-hmm. after work and then come back. And it was crazy. Luckily, Michaela had a job where she was able to work from home. That was a huge blessing.
And that in itself was a huge, like, miracle, too. Oh. Like, we could talk about that forever as well, just the timing of everything.
Yeah.
I had just gotten that job, like, and where I could work from home. And I know for sure that that was a huge...
By divine design.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. So, yeah, this went on for 3 weeks. Obviously, by this time, we were head over heels in love. Oh, we got to back up. We didn't even talk about meeting Tracy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Michaela went. Reese was 2 days old the day she came home from the hospital. And then she came back home, showed me pictures and everything. Obviously, at this point, already we're like, we're in trouble. But they called us that night, I think, that Michaela got home and said that they had talked to Tracy and asked if she would want to meet us. And they said yes. And this was kind of all done. Hopefully nobody from the state is listening, because it was kind of done behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. But they were able to arrange for us to come back over the next day and meet Tracy. And she got to see Reese.
Well, first, hold on. I just want to, like, share how, like, nervous I was, like, just preparing for that day, because, you know, I didn't know her. I didn't, you know really much about her other than her struggles. And I just thought, like, how am I going to be able to be in this room and, like, be that woman, like, that is taking this other woman's child? Like, you know, I was even worried about what I was gonna wear. You know, I didn't want to look too, like, prissy, or, like, you know, or, you know, I wanted her to like me and love me, really, because she was giving me, and I didn't even really 100% know at the time, you know, one of the biggest miracles of my life. And I just wanted her to know that it was a right fit. And so I remember her walking in, and, you know, she, you know, is in her pajamas, and she had just given birth and hadn't seen Reese. And so we wanted to make sure that, like, when she came in, we weren't the ones holding Reese. And so we had our family friend, she was holding her at the time, and she, passed Reese off to Tracy, and she, like, held her, and she actually, like, swaddled her differently. And I just was, like, trying so hard to, like, hold back the tears, because it was such a beautiful moment, you know, like, you could tell that she had those motherly instincts, and
you could see the love that she had for her.
Yeah. And I'm really proud of her in those moments, because, you know, we found out later that, you know, she did do everything that she could to stay off, you know, drugs while she was pregnant with Reese. And that was the only child out of the 7 children that she had that she wasn't on drugs, and during her pregnancies. And so we were blessed in that sense. But she had walked in, she re-swaddled Reese, and she looks up at us, and she said that we are going to be awesome parents. And she looked down at Reese and kissed her and hugged her and then handed her over to me. And she said, I know that you're going to be an awesome mom. And I will never forget that. No matter, like, what people feel about her or her past or what she has gone through, like, she truly is our angel because she gave us, like, the best gift. And that moment was just, like, such a beautiful moment. I can't even explain it. Like, just the tender mercy for me, but, like, the heartache for her, like, and the sacrifice that she had to make. And knowing her story and knowing what she's gone through in her life just makes us so thankful for her.
Yeah, that was a moment I will never forget. Also, it was so beautiful. And again, just seeing Tracy, you could, it was beautiful. You could see how much she loved this baby. And because of the circumstances of her life, she really had no control in this child's life. And it's sad and it's unfortunate, but she was also with it enough to know that in that moment that we were what was best for her.
Well, and there's, I mean, some people that are listening might be confused because, you know, we did say that she hadn't taken any drugs throughout her pregnancy, but there were reasons why she took drugs the last week that we won't go into detail about, but she did take drugs the last week, and that is why CPS got involved, and they, I mean, obviously there was a reason, but
Tracy knew that she couldn't take care of a baby, and she, I think, knew that the state would be able to find a better place for her than otherwise. And just because of the circumstances of her life, it's really hard to explain. I'm sure you all know people that have been addicted to drugs and stuff, and it's just mentally they're not the same, right? And for her, because of how long she's been in the situation she has been, she, I think, really has a difficult time being in reality.
Yeah. Doesn't trust a whole lot of people and has shared a lot with us into how she got to this place. And just every person's worst nightmare.
Yeah, we have no room to judge her at all. She is our forever angel. And if we have any say, she has a special place waiting for her. Regardless of anything, that she's perfect to us, and we will forever be thankful. But that doesn't mean that it was over and we adopted Reese the next day. Reese was not her given name. In this whole process, we had some contact with Tracy, with the state, with our family friends, and about a month into all of it, the state found out, well, there was a new caseworker, and the state found out that Michaela had been going and back and forth and seeing her, and she basically put a stop to it. She said, you can't come anymore. And that was heartbreaking. Our family friends were trying to figure out how we could possibly be given custody and everything, because they were just emergency custody. This couple, they were still working. They were empty nesters, but they weren't in any position to be able to take care of a baby long term, right? So they were trying to get that figured out. And basically at that point, the state told them, you have to just tell us if you can't do it anymore, and we will find a different home. You don't get to pick. We will first look for any family members and stuff. And at that point, it was difficult, but we were talking with them, and we knew that for any of this to work out in our favor, that's what would have to happen. They would have to tell them that we can't care for this child anymore. And because they weren't letting us be involved at all anyway.
Yeah, they found out, and I'll never forget that call. It's like, you cannot be at the house. You cannot be, I mean, a lot of it was COVID, but at the same time, like, we hadn't done nothing for adopting or any of the
fostering
classes at that time.
Yeah. So we understood, we got it, but at the same time, it seemed like one caseworker was okay with it. And like, she knew that the long-term goal was for us to potentially be involved anyway. Anyway, and there's a lot of moving parts and stuff, right? And so everybody doesn't know the whole story, or, you know, conversations that we've had with Tracy and stuff like that, even though technically we weren't really supposed to be having those conversations.
But from the very beginning, she was very adamant that she was okay with us adopting Race. Mm-hmm. And very much on board with the whole process. So that's why we were kind of like, okay, let's move forward.
Yeah, she had even told us that we could basically call her what we were wanting and hoping to name our baby. So we had her permission, obviously, before we started doing any of that.
But we had gotten fingerprints done, like, after we got the okay from her and stuff, we kind of started to, like, really...
Yeah, the state kind of pointed us in the right direction into how, you know, if we did get placement, that, you know, legally we would be on the right path for that and stuff.
We had our first hearing, and that was horrible.
Well, was that first one? That first one was after we got custody.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought that was before. Sorry. I'm jumping again.
That's okay. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
So we found out, we had gotten in contact with what's called a CASA. She was on the case. She knew that we were involved, and she actually knew me from before I went to high school with her son. So there was a little bit of a background there. Incredible, awesome individual. She was so helpful. She's certainly another angel in our story.
100%.
And she was communicating with us, you know, helping us. Technically, she was not an employee of the state. She's kind of a middle ground party. Her interest is solely the child. And so she knew everything that everybody was on board with, other than the state. They didn't know exactly. Because in order to adopt from the state, there's a lot that has to happen. And so they weren't even close to going there yet. So everything had happened. Our family friends went to the state, said, okay, we can't do this. Court was scheduled for the following Monday. This was probably on like a Thursday, the Thursday before, that they told the state, and they said, okay, we'll have a hearing and we'll figure out placement at this next hearing. And so we knew that we were an option. And then last minute, like that Friday, we found out that there was a family member that was a possible option. Yeah. And
as you can imagine, we are literally like the only ones that they were telling, like we were taking care of her. We were, you know, her parents basically. And literally it was a month that we were with her. And like Brent said, the Friday before the hearing, like we finally, this uncle comes forward and says that he is interested, and it just broke us.
Yeah, the CASA called us and we could tell something was wrong. She wasn't super thrilled about something. She said there's a family member that's come forward and said that they'd be willing to take her. And she said, I have to warn you. I think at this time, this conversation was on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And the hearing was that next Monday. And she said, I have to warn you. I have never seen a child not go with a viable family member. So we were crushed, devastated. That weekend was a long weekend. Mm-hmm. We tried like staying busy.
We were going through the same emotions almost as like the scammed adoption.
Yeah, it was almost like here we go again. Except this time we were way more invested, in love with this little girl. And
staying up with her, changing her diapers, looking at her, you know, smile.
And singing to her. And early on, I knew that somehow this was all going to work. I just knew that she was my little girl. And so as much as I could in these moments, I just had to exercise faith. Heavenly Father, I don't know how you're going to do this, but please, you know. And we knelt down and said a prayer that Sunday night, the night before the hearing, and we were just holding each other and begged Heavenly Father. This was the first time in my life that I had ever actually asked him for a miracle. And it's, I think before this, I always thought, you know, asking for something like that, a miracle from God, is a little bit selfish, but in this moment, I knew that he was the only one that could fix this. And we went to bed. Our phone started ringing the next morning at 6 o'clock. And it was our family friend. And Michaela answered. You want to tell them what she said?
She said, there's been a miracle. And you need to get here as soon as possible. And we were like, what? Like, because Brent had to work that day. And we were planning on just, like, listening in. And she's like, yeah, it's a miracle. Miracles happened. And you won't believe it, but you just have to hurry and get here. Because the biological dad wants to meet with you. And he says that he won't go through with anything until he meets with you. And so I don't even know what I put on. I didn't even care. But I was a little nervous because I didn't know anything really about the biological dad. Like, we had just been really, like, working with the biological mom. And I knew that, you know, he had some drug abuse in his life, and he had gone through so much in his lifetime too, and I was a little scared because at the time I didn't know anything about him, and Brent couldn't go with me, and so I got ready really quick and headed that way. And Do you want to?
Because court was at 9. The hearing was at 9.
And it took me 2 hours to get there. And so literally from...
Yeah, she got there, tried to meet with him first, and was able to meet him, kind of filled in what had happened. There were some things, we won't go into detail, but apparently there was some things that he had been made aware of over the weekend, and he wasn't going to let his child go with anybody on that particular side of the family. And so he met Michaela. What did he say?
He just said that, I mean, literally the first thing that he said was, I just want you to know that I'm going to get my daughter back, and this is just temporary. And I was like, absolutely, you know, I didn't want to push anything. And I was just so glad that, you know, we even were in this position, even though it was at the cost of someone else. And we won't go into details of that, but.
And Tracy was on board with this also. She was there when you met them, right? Yeah. And she was fully aware of everything, and she was in agreement with the birth dad. We'll call him Kevin.
I'm sure your dad's going to love that.
Yeah, it's not my dad, but my dad's name is Kevin. So here I am. I'm at work. At this time, we didn't know that we were allowed to call in to the court hearings, so I'm just on pins and needles waiting to hear anything. Oh, actually, you guys called me right before, and I was able to talk to Kevin a little bit, and he told me the same thing. He says, you know, I appreciate you stepping up and being willing to do this, but I'm going to get her back. I said, I will be her daddy as long as she needs. And so court happens. I'm at work at about an hour and a half later.
Don't tell me yet. Like, we have to explain everything first.
So, okay, sorry.
Okay, so the judge had, like, been talking a little bit and wanted to kind of, like, hear from both of the biological parents. And she got to Kevin and was like, are you, you know, okay with this? And they were... I mean, she went into that hearing thinking that Reese was going to go with the uncle. That was the plan all along. And again, mind you, our Costa was trying to prepare us, you know, like, I just don't think that it's going to go your way. Like, it's just not going to. And so the judge got to Kevin and basically asked if he was okay with this. And he interrupted her and said, Your Honor, like, no, I'm not okay with this. Over the weekend, I found out things that I'm not okay with, and told him what, you know, he had heard. And it was something so tragic that was the only thing that probably could have happened for the judge to rule that Reese would be able to be in our care. And she said, well, that completely changes things. And because of this, because I'm hearing about this, I will grant, you know, like full custody or like care to the Wyatts. The judge was really shocked that she came to that ruling, and she basically granted us care of Reese and said that she was going to allow us to be her full-time caregivers. And I dropped, like, I just completely started crying. It was a huge moment because literally a night before, we were just like pleading with Heavenly Father and just thinking that there's just no way. I was way more skeptical. Brent, I even remember Brent being like, I truly feel in my heart that she is ours. And I just, after all of the heartbreak that we had gone through, I just didn't want to allow myself to go there. And so sometimes I can be a little bit of a pessimist sometimes, like a happy pessimist, I guess. I don't know. And I called Brent right away. And yeah, what did I say?
I don't know if you were able to call me or if you sent me a text.
No, I called you.
You called me. I mean, she couldn't really say anything, but she said, we got her. And then she said, I can't talk. I got to go. And I'm sitting there like, what in the world? And here I am. I'm a UPS driver, right? It's not really safe to drive with tears in your eyes. So I was at work. I know exactly where I was when it happened. And then my phone rang again, and it was the CASA. And she says, I don't know how, but we did it. She was bawling, and she just couldn't believe it. And then Michaela calls me back, explains everything. Reese had a doctor's appointment. It was her 1 month checkup. And then she was going to be taken home that day. And
that was the first time that we had ever been able to take her out of the house for a month, like because of COVID. So like we were never able to drive with her, never able to take her anywhere. Like, and so I was, so we went and took her to the doctor's appointment. And then I just remember, like, I signed like all these paperwork. And I remember, like, just picking her up and being like, how is this possible? Like, and I'm driving, I have to drive another hour and, you know, 45 minutes home, and I'm like driving so slow, like like such a granny, because I just was like terrified. But in my head, I'm just like, I mean, I'm bawling and I'm praying and I'm like, how is this possible that I have this tiny little sweet human in the back seat? Like, and I am responsible for her. I'm sure that's probably what every parent thinks when they're driving their first home, but it was just a beautiful, beautiful moment. And I remember pulling up to the house, and Brent was like, already, I think you had just gotten off, but you had
showered,
gotten home like super quick.
I worked as fast as I could to get home. I didn't want them to beat me home. So yeah, I was there just a nervous wreck. And I videoed her coming down the drive and me going and getting her out.
You were like the first pale time. As a ghost, and Brent's like not a pale guy, but you were like so white.
I was nervous. It was it was crazy. And we brought her in, showed her her house, and she met her doggies, and
they loved her.
It was an incredible day, and there was a lot of really good days after that. And a lot of not so good days. So we were given emergency. I think it was considered still emergency custody because we weren't officially licensed at this time. We had to go through a whole long process of getting licensed. That's a whole animal that we won't talk about. But all of that, and then going back and forth with the state and visitations
and the biological dad's attorney was awful, treated us
we were treated
horrible,
terribly for at least the first year and a half of fostering Reese. We were always called caregivers, only caregivers. We could never make any decisions, which I totally get. Yeah, like it all makes sense. But with the circumstances, we knew that, and even individuals in the state knew that the biological parents would never be able to get custody, get her back. But still they just treated us terribly. And we have so many stories, and we could talk for hours and hours about that whole process. The biological dad's attorney called us a whole bunch of names on a conference call.
Said they were trying to scam the system.
Said we were trying to steal their child. And it was hard, but...
I do want to say, like, for anyone that is going through this, I think that, I mean, for our story, it's probably going to be different than other people's stories that you will hear on this podcast. But I think that one of the biggest reasons why we want to do this is because we do want to shed light on, like, our situation and help other people who are in those same situations, not just in our stories, but others. And I think that if you are listening and you are going through this process, like, the biggest advice that I could give you is to, and I have had so many people reach out that are going through it and like, how do we do this? And the biggest advice is to just continue the process. And something that they always told us is like, DaCosta would always say is like, the squeaky wheel like wins the race. And so what she meant by that is like, if you continue to just really push and push and push like the state, they really don't like that. And so like being a squeaky wheel, like just every so often nudging
annoying.
And yeah, but like kind of nudging a little bit, but not too much. It's kind of sick because it's a game, but if I would have known in the beginning, like how this all would unravel and that these people have their jobs that they have to do, right? They have to follow a certain procedure, and no one ever told us that. It was always just, no, you're the caregiver. Like, you need to get over that. Like, you know, this child, it's a good possibility that this child is going to be taken away from you at any time. And so I just, they have to say that. And I mean, we are fortunate.
And we found out too, the CASA told us that because Reese is in a safe place, that she always kind of got put on the back burner.
Yeah.
That they didn't really, it wasn't at the forefront of their concerns because she was in a good, safe home.
And it did take us, we didn't say this, but it did take us 3.5 years to actually adopt her after taking her home that day.
And there was a lot of things that had to happen in between there.
Yeah.
Too. And like, that kind of forced their hand a little bit. But fostering is not, it's beautiful, but it takes a special person to be able to put yourself in that situation. And throughout the whole thing, there's many times that we would look at each other and think like, this isn't worth it.
Yeah.
Like after this, we will never do this again. And now, being in a situation wherein we do it 10 times over.
Yeah, knowing the full system. I just wish that they would, like, talk to, you know, the parent, or, like, people like us, the caregivers, a little bit more and explain it a little bit differently and better. Because it wasn't even until, like, 2 years later that I was finally able to speak to one of the CASA's managers. And she had kind of explained the whole, like, system. And because for so long, like at every hearing, like they never really asked the biological parents like about their drug use or anything like that. And we're just sitting in the background and we're like, I mean, literally, like how could you continue to let them have services? And you know, we were just looking at the face value of what it looked like. And you know, they just would give chance after chance after chance, and we didn't understand that. And had someone really explained the process to it us like a little bit better, I think that we would have been able to, well, at least I would have been able to sleep better at night. Brent always had faith that things would work out, but
I knew she was my baby girl.
I know.
She was never going to get taken from me.
I think that as women, especially, we just like overthink things. Well, at least I do. I don't know. I can't speak for every woman, but we overthink things. And I would just lay at night like thinking like, what if there's a family member out there that, you know, would take her or find out where we lived and, you know, like steal her in the middle of the night. I mean, my mind would just go crazy. But I really do wish that, you know, there was more explanation And I think that if we can do anything through this, like we can be spokespeople for, you know, other couples that are going through it, and just continue to go through the motions. I know it's scary. I know it's, you know, not every outcome is like ours. There are tragedies that happen. I have friends that, you know, are going through it actually at this very moment that their child was taken away. But it's just, you have to go through those motions and you have to follow what the state is doing. They have a procedure that they have to follow. But, you know, I think that one thing that I wish I would have done sooner is just, you know, planted those little seeds, like show pictures of your family to the caseworkers, like be connected to the caseworkers, because if they connect to you, on a different level, like your case will be at the top of their head. I worked for Social Security Disability for a while, and I knew that that was kind of how like cases did. Some cases got moved along is because there's so many cases that come through, you know, Social Security and in this situation, and so many files that just get left because there's just so many that they have to work on. And so if you can somehow just get closer to the caseworker, putting a face to the name, you know, send pictures of the child with you so that they like, I mean, I hate to say it, but like you more to like work on your case more, you know. Or just checking in every so often, not every day, like don't bombard them, but just being present, but also, you know, not being forceful.
So it took 3.5 years to be able to adopt Reese, but we're not going to go into that just yet. There's some miracles and stuff that had to lead to that happening, us being able to adopt her. We knew that it was going that way, but until it's done, it's never done. So, lots of miracles, but also many, many angels in her story. The birth parents, obviously, and our CASA in this episode. Those are our angels, and you're always my angel. Mm. we're excited to be able to continue on this journey. We hope you'll stick around, listen to part 3 before we go. What's something you know to be true?
Oh man, you always put me on the spot when I'm not even thinking about it. How about you go first?
Something I know to be true is I know that I would not be able to have the amount of joy in my life that I have right now without having experienced all of the many lows and the heartache. I fully appreciate where I'm at and what it took to get here, but I truly think that had things not gone the way that they have in my life, there's lots of things in my life that I would take for granted, and so there has to be opposites, right? Good and evil. And I would not know what the joy is like without the pains that I've been through. So I'm grateful for my trials that I've been through so that I can experience the beautiful things in life that I have and appreciate them more.
And I think that something that it's not always been easy for me, but something that I know to be true is patience is a virtue. And in our story, obviously, we had to wait a very long time, and I am not the most patient person, but looking back on all the years that we have had to go through not just the adoption, but infertility and just waiting and trying to figure out, like, why do we have to go through this? Like, and what the heck is going through Heavenly Father's mind? Like, I've just learned that, you know, on the other end of the frustration and the sadness and the torture and the hardship comes beautiful blessings that I think that sometimes we just have to grow a little bit stronger to achieve, and He knows what we need and when we need it, and He knows us so well that He will bless us in His timing, and we just have to be patient.
Just like you have to be patient and wait for part 3 for next week. We'll see you then.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. If today's episode touched your heart, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more real stories, everyday miracles, and reminders that angels are among us. And just remember, while we're waiting, God is working.
Has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.